Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. My name is Ryan and today I am thrilled to be chatting with none other than Clint McElroy. Some of our listeners may know Clint from the wildly popular Dungeons & Dragons podcast, The Adventure Zone. He's also one of the authors of The Adventure Zone graphic novels, and we're going to get into all of that and more during our chat today. Clint, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, no, thank you for giving me something to distract me from being quarantined. I'm tickled to be here. I really enjoy your podcast. You guys have been doing such a good job
Thank you.
Because I know that hadn't been fun, but I'm tickled to be here.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, we are thrilled to have you on. All of my coworkers are so jealous. And you know, I'll talk about this again later, but I made the first graphic novel, Here There Be Gerblins, that was my staff pick for a full year when that came out.
Oh, God bless you.
Oh, man. But before we get into the graphic novels, I wonder if you could give our listeners a little bit of backstory for the podcast and how that got started and what that is. Those rare people who haven't listened to The Adventure Zone.
Where have you been, for one thing? My sons, Justin, Travis, and Griffin, have been podcasting. They had a wildly popular podcast called My Brother, My Brother, Me. I say had, it's have.
Yeah. 10 years now, right?
Yeah. Still going on, just past their 500th episode not long ago. Whoa. My oldest son, Justin, when his wife Sydney was about to give birth, Justin knew he was going to have to be on paternity leave for a while. So we wanted to get a couple of, they wanted to get a couple of Mabim Bams, you know, on deck to fill in. And they said, listen, this is what's funny. Our listeners, a lot of them have suggested that we play D&D and record it and have dad sit in, because I'd sat in on a couple of Mabim Bams before. Yeah. So, yeah, that'll be funny. That'll be a lark. That'll be a one-time thing, and it doesn't make any difference how horrible it is. Nobody's going to pay any attention. So we sat down, and we did it. We had a fantastic time, and it just took off. The people from the Max Fun Network said, hey, you want to be on the network? And people started listening, and it really just exploded is what it did, and it was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, I remember when Sydney was about to give birth, and I remember them being like, I think we'll maybe play D&D with our dad, and I was like, that sounds fun.
Yeah. I had never played D&D before.
Okay.
And neither had any of the three of them. I think Travis had goofed around a little bit with it, you know, once or twice, but we were complete and unplowed fields. I mean, we had not played it at all, and I think that was kind of the charm of it, that you know, these four D&D boobs came along and were able to put a really cool story. And of course, you know, after a while the story itself kind of took over, and yeah, we realized we had something special going on.
Yeah, it's an incredible story. My husband is on, I think, his sixth listen through the balance arc.
Wow.
It's always on in our house.
Oh, that makes me feel so terrific. Be part of something that people have gotten such a kick out of.
It's great.
Is a thrill.
Yeah. So then you've got this amazing podcast. It's hilarious. It's full of heart. It's a ton of fun. How did it become a graphic novel? Whose idea was that? What was that process like?
Well, I have been a lifelong comic book fan. I've been a lifelong reader. I mean, really and truly, voracious. You look under voracious in the dictionary, and there's my mug right next to it. But I've always loved comics. I still collect comics. And growing up, There were a lot of comic books around the house, and the boys grew up reading comics. So it was always just a favorite medium for me. I think it's powerful. I think it's evocative. I think done right, it's like nothing else. The only thing I think that is more provocative and imagination satisfying is actually textbooks, reading prose books.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we were approached by, as most projects that we get involved in, we're approached by somebody who has a passion for it. And we were approached by this guy who ended up being our literary agent. His name's Charlie Olson, works for Inkwell. And Charlie said, have you guys ever thought of doing a graphic novel, adapting it into a graphic novel? And I mean, we said, no, we haven't really. So we had a couple of meetings with Charlie, and you know, he said, well, if you're interested, do this, do this, do this. And we did that. And then he started taking it around to people. And I mean, surprising to us, people were really interested in it. And the folks at First Second, Calista Brill, said, yes, yes. I think at some point she threatened to throw Charlie out a window if he didn't get it. So, I mean, almost everything we have done that have been spinoffs of The Adventure Zone or extensions or adaptations have come from somebody having a passion for it. That's how we got Carrie Peach to be the artist on the graphic novels. It's how, like the card game and the other things, just about everything that has spun off have been somebody coming to us saying, I love this. I would like to do something. And Charlie was the one that did that in the graphic novel realm.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. I love that. In the books, like in the back, there's fan art of the characters and things. Like, I just love that. And I feel like you guys and the brothers, I feel like you've always sort of been like, yeah, we're here because of the fans. You definitely.
There is no doubt. We owe everything to those fans. And I think that reception, that the way people have embraced the podcast and now the graphic novels and everything else has been kind of justification for us in the fact that we acknowledge, you know, it sounds corny and it sounds like something every creator says, we owe it all to our audience. Well, we really do. Our audience has not only supported us, but has kind of helped shape the narrative. And so that was a real thrill. That was extremely cool for us. And so the way things have evolved, is, you know, working with, you know, fan, Carrie Peach, like I just mentioned, was a fan and did fan art and just, you know, and she was already a professional artist. She was already working on Lumberjanes and other things.
Yes.
And so, you know, it was just kind of a natural extension, but we really have tried to maintain a real symbiosis between the people that consume The Adventure Zone, whether it be in the podcast form or graphic novel form or other forms. And we feel very honored to have those people and pretty close to them, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that your name is listed first as the author. I'm going to give you all the credit for writing this.
I think that's the luck of alphabetizing.
But what did that look like when you guys sat down to adapt this? Because like, I love things like Griffin as the DM up in the margins is just so clever and so fun. So like, what was that process like?
We made a lot of decisions early on about what we were going to have and what we were not going to have, what we needed. Podcasting is an audio medium and not everything translates, but that was the only foundation we had. That was the only bones on the skeleton. So very early on, we made the decision that the book was going to be about Taco, Magnus, and Merle, and not Clint, Justin, and Travis.
Okay.
Because if you listen to the podcast, it's us, And a lot of it is us. Yeah. And then, you know, riffing in character, but a lot of it, especially in the early goings, was us playing ourselves. Mm-hmm. So we decided we really didn't want that. We wanted the story of the boys to be at the very center of everything. And then we made the decision that the Dungeon Master had to be a character. Griffin is very well represented in these graphic novels because everybody who's not Taco, Merle, or Magnus is Griffin.
Yeah.
But there was, we really liked that element of the Dungeon Master as the observer and interacting with them. It's very meta, and it was a way to keep a lot of meta references in the story. We really didn't want to lose that. We wanted to have Girl from Ipanema playing in every elevator, and making references to, you know, modern things. And we just felt like if we were going to make that change, it would be good to have the Dungeon Master and put words into the, you know, have the Dungeon Master be voicing those thoughts in the book. So we made a lot of decisions about what we wanted to have and what we didn't want to have. And then we kind of settled into what is basically the way we still do them. And that is actually re-listening to the episodes, and then going with transcripts and kind of me doing some breakdowns, doing page by page breakdowns. We have an extensive outline, and then I'll start putting things into panels, and then take a pass at dialogue. But then we, you know, using the Google Docs, they're constantly being shared back and forth between all four of us, and our terrific editor over our books, Allison Wilgus, is just phenomenal. And so we'll take a pass, and then we'll take another pass, take another pass, take another pass. And so that's kind of the process. It really is a terrific collaboration, I think, between me and the boys and Carrie and Allison as well. But we kind of put together, I'll use this analogy again, the skeleton, and then we start laying the layers of sinew on it, I guess. But it really is a co-writing experience. It's just that I had experience writing comics from the 80s, so I kind of knew the form, and that's kind of what the process was at the beginning.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, it's so effective. These are gorgeous graphic novels. They're amazing.
Well, if they're gorgeous, thanks to Carrie.
Thanks to Carrie.
Yeah, I can't say enough. She really is, she is so easy to work with, and yet we lean on her so much. All the way from panels to, you know, well, she created this whole visual canon. She created this particular visual canon for the graphic novels. And her work is beautiful. What I love is giving her something she's not comfortable doing, like the train. Like the train. She said, "Oh God, I've got to draw a train." So for days, I was sending her pictures. Look at this train. Hey, look, here's another train. What can you do with the train? But she's absolutely fantastic. Love working with Carrie.
Oh, that's fantastic. I imagine she had some interesting challenges with Pedals to the Metal. There's a specific scene I'm thinking of involving Merle.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And she just, that was another thing. She said, "I've got to design all these battle wagons." And I can't wait for you to see when it
comes. I'm so excited.
It's terrific. It really is.
Oh, I can't wait. Okay, so why don't we talk a little bit about Pedals to the Metal? So it's the third book in this series thus far. So where, give our listeners a little bit of like, where are we meeting up with our adventurers this time?
Of course, Gerblins was just kind of a out there dungeon crawl, pretty straight dungeon crawls. And then Rockport was, well, it was Murder on the Orient Express.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a pretty straightforward whodunit.
Yep.
And at this point in the podcast, the mythology really started to solidify. We had the Bureau of Balance. We had the director and all of these. And the search for the Grand Relics really had been set as, okay, here's the template. This is what you're going to have to set out to do. And I think that the pedals to the metal was special to us. At least it was to me, and the boys have expressed the same thing to me. We started, this is about the point where we started saying, man, we got something kind of special going on here. And so, I mean, not just the story, but you know, the reaction to it and the way the characters had started developing. And so, Pedals of the Metal, they get their second assignment, but they're going after their third grand relic, and it is a grand relic that it controls nature. And it starts off as kind of a crime investigation thing, but it turns into a fantasy Fast and Furious. And there is a huge battle wagon battle that is practically almost the last third of the book, maybe even more than that. And when we were doing the podcast, when we were doing that, I can remember when we were doing the battle wagon race and my heart was beating. And I mean, and we're doing this verbally, we're talking back and forth, and then this, and then the excitement was building. And I haven't, you know, I'm a big fan of old time radio, and the old time radio shows had that effect. And then when we were doing that, when we're doing this podcast about these characters, and we were just so excited doing it. It was like a thrill ride. And I think, you know, this was actually, I think, before we had even started talking about doing graphic novels, but I can remember thinking this would be so visual. This would be so amazing to see. And so they head out, they meet some amazing new characters, that have become huge fan favorites.
Yep.
And that's been one of the cool things about every issue and of every arc, is the fact that these beloved characters, you know, come to life, you know, visually for yep. people. It was Angus in Rockport, yeah. You know, the character everybody loves better than the three of us. and then we get Hurley and Sloan in Pedals of the Metal. And that was one of the most fun things about it as the podcast went on, was we filled this universe with these really cool characters, lovable, hateable. And it was really kind of neat to see that happen, see it expand.
Mm, I love it so much. I mean, it is truly great storytelling. You know, I've said it, my husband has said it, Patrick Rothfuss said it in the opening, that truly that it's some of the best storytelling, just hands down. It's really, really incredible. And I was so, so thrilled when I found out that it was going to be adapted into a graphic novel. And it's so funny because, so I, you know, I remember hearing you guys talk about it on the podcast, oh, we're making a graphic novel or whatever. And as a bookseller, I get advanced reader copies, and I happened to be logged into my like special bookseller account, and I saw that there was a digital copy of Here There Be Gerblins. And I lost my mind. and I read the whole thing at work.
Oh, okay.
And then I went home.
Hopefully your bosses aren't listening.
Yeah, no, I was on my break. It was fine. And I went home and I didn't, and you know, my husband is a huge, huge, huge fan. And I didn't say anything. I just opened up my laptop and it just was there. And the look on his face the greatest.
Oh.
And we sat there and we read through it again together. And I mean, we were like crying, laughing. It was so funny. And it was so much fun to see these characters on the page. And you know, you were talking earlier about what a beautiful art form graphic novels are. And I completely agree. I think, you know, it's interesting. I think for so long, they were this really underrated form of literature and storytelling. And I think finally people are starting to realize like, oh no, graphic novels are amazing. You know, I mean, like, what an incredible genre. You've got things like, you know, Sandman and Watchmen and Mouse and Blankets and like all of these like really beautiful pieces of literature. And now you're starting to see like classic novels being adapted, right? We've got like Handmaid's Tale and I think there's a Diary of Anne Frank one. We just found out that they're adapting The Great Gatsby. And so it's like all of a sudden people are like, oh, this is legitimate.
Yeah. And I think when they started, I think when publishers started being a little more open-minded about things like that, I mean, you have things like true crime, graphic novels, documentaries, anything that you can do in film, anything you can do on television, you can do in a graphic novel. And I think that now people are much more open to that concept. I think that before you may have had a certain snob appeal, you know, oh, well, okay, a graphic novel. I mean, I'd rather read the prose novel. Well, I can see that. But, you know, I think that now people are a little more open-minded and realize that a graphic novel can be just as compelling, just as interesting and just as entertaining and just as moving.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually think, you know, it's, and I kind of use this sort of like logic with some of my customers, and especially the ones who are parents of young kids, that graphic novels are a very natural way for us to read a story and to internalize a story, because, you know, we'll have, and this luckily doesn't happen often, but every once in a while we'll get someone who comes in and they don't want their kid to get a graphic novel. They want their kid to get a quote unquote real book.
Right.
And I always jump in because I'm like, no, this is a real book. And
right.
If you think about this progression, right? So we've got kids learning to read. They're starting with picture books, right? And then they're going into these like leveled readers that are illustrated. And then they're maybe getting into the first chapter books, which still have illustrations.
Right.
And so like, this is just, to completely take the pictures away just makes no sense.
I think it's, every medium has their own, you know, advantages. Every medium has its own appeals. I know that Carol Kalish, who was with, I think, Marvel for years and years, I interviewed her once, and, you know, she was a huge advocate of using comic books to teach kids how to read. And yeah, I have done it with all my granddaughters. Lydia and Charlie both, and soon, very soon, Bibi. But with Lydia, for instance, because she's the oldest, she's going to be going into fourth grade. But a couple of years ago, she was really having trouble reading. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that she couldn't do it, it's just she just wasn't interested in it. And so I started getting her some of the graphic novels, like the DC Inc. and DC came out with, I don't remember which one was aimed at a younger audience, Zoom or Inc. But, you know, she loves superheroes. Mm. So, okay. And so I pick her up a couple of those. And so now she is reading to us on FaceTime. And Charlie's the same way. We'll get on FaceTime. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. When the quarantine started, we were trying to FaceTime with our grandkids as much as we possibly could. And so we got into this routine of getting on FaceTime and like helping Lydia with her homework. And so I say we, but it was me. And I would sit down and do the math and, you know, she'd do her spelling. Mm-hmm. And then one day Carol said, well, I got an idea. And she got on after I did on the FaceTime and read her, was reading her Harriet the Spy. Aww. And so that's how I got the idea to do the live reads that we do every evening, you know, during quarantine. Mm-hmm. Stories from Your Gaffer on the McElroy Family YouTube channel. And, you know, that's where I got that idea. So, you know, now we've got Charlie who gets on FaceTime with us and is reading her books. And it's just so cool to see. You're exactly right. If you love graphic novels, it isn't going to preclude you from reading prose novels, hopefully. No. It's just like if you watch television, you can't watch movies. Well, now the only way you watch movies, I guess, is on television. But you know, if you read a prose book, you can't read comic books or vice versa. It's insane. And so, you know, I think there is that prejudice. Of course, that's an extension of, you know, there were for decades prejudice and probably some against comic books.
Yep.
You know, they were disposable. They, you know, were thrown out. And so, I think that's just kind of a natural extension, but, you know, but graphic novels are great for everybody, not just as a way to introduce kids how to read.
Yeah, no, and it's really funny because I had some as a kid, but I didn't really get into them until I was in a college course and you know, I don't even remember which graphic novel it was that we read, but we read one and I was like, something about having a professor like explain just how involved it was and like the symbolism in just the way the panels were set up and the colors they chose and all the stuff. And I was like, oh, this is cool. This is a very cool form of literature.
It is, and I now owe my living to it, I guess.
Yeah. And you guys are bestsellers. You're New York Times bestsellers.
Oh, I wasn't going to bring that up twice. Yeah, but, you know, I don't know. I don't want to jinx it. Yeah, that was one of the most amazing things. When we were working on Gerblins, when we were writing it, Charlie Olson, the agent that really, you know, had the brainchild, he said, man, we just found out the New York Times is going to stop doing a graphic novel top 10 list.
Yep.
I mean, we said, oh, that's too bad. We didn't, I mean, okay. So, you know,
right.
So when Gerblins came out and made the top 10 list of they lumped it into paperbacks.
Yeah.
We were amazed. I mean, absolutely amazed. And then Rockport went to number one.
Yep.
And we were going, what? What, you people? And now I understand they've brought back the graphic novel or are bringing back the graphic novel.
Yeah, I think they either have or are about to, yeah.
So I'm not saying we broke the system, but.
I mean. I'll say it. I remember coming into work because one of my coworkers, she kind of like, we have a display of all the bestsellers. And so she swaps it out every week or what have you. And she had just printed the list and put it up and she hadn't even put any of the books up. And I walked by and I went, McElroy. I was like, wait a minute. I know that name. And I literally ran like screaming through the store to go grab the copy of the book so I could put it. It was the first one I put on the display. I was like, you guys. Oh, I was so excited. I was so proud. I don't know. Again, I think it's one of those things that like the fans feel this kind of like kinship because of the podcast. Like we feel like we know you guys. And I was just like, oh, they're on the bestseller list.
We did it. Yeah. I'm a shameless shill. whenever we go anywhere, I'm going to find a bookstore, and if they've got copies, I'm going to say, hey, you want me to sign those? And I'm taking pictures of all the displays. I'll never forget. My lovely wife, Carol, she's not a graphic novel fan, huge reader, but just, mm-hmm. They just don't do it for her. Yeah. And so she's been very pleased with the success. But the day we went into the Strand in New York, and walked up to a shelf, and there was a display with our graphic novels, and she looked at me, and I think it was the first time she said, "Hey, maybe there is something to this." So that, getting recognized in public, that blows her away.
Oh, that is so much fun! Yeah, well, like I said, I can't remember if I said this before or after we started recording, but Gerblins was my staff pick for a full year. So that was on display. As soon as you walk into the store, it was like right there with my review.
You are so in the will. Yeah, I'm putting it in the will. You're in there for good.
Nailed it. Oh my gosh. All right. So let's see. So, all right. The Adventures on Pedals to the Metal. It comes out July 14th. It's available for pre-order now. Gibson's Bookstore, we're obviously going to have copies of it. We have copies of the first two on hand at all times. I'll make sure to put the links to all of that in the show notes. I truly can't recommend these books highly enough. They're really good. And I say that not just as a fan, but as someone who is a reader. I had never played Dungeons and Dragons before. It's if you like fantasy or adventure or humor, any of them, you're gonna love these books. They're great. That's my piece. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on before we wrap up?
No, I just encourage everybody. And this sounds like beating a dead horse. Obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, checking out this podcast, you read. But I would just encourage everybody to just read more. Mm-hmm. I mean, honest and truly, read more. You know, it's very tempting, especially in quarantine, to, and Carol and I do it. We binge we've been binging, Blacklist, and, we've been going Ozark, and, we've been binging all those things. And then Animal Crossing came into our lives, and so there's that. But I'm telling you, folks, and I'm not putting down any other form of medium, but reading a book and really getting into it, because it's your imagination that's creating things, and it's so powerful. And some of my favorite books of all time, the first Dune by Frank Herbert, Lonesome Dove by Larry McMurtry, the Dark Tower series, and I read everything. My nightstand, I counted right before I came in here, has 24 books on it.
Yes.
and the reason there's so many, and you don't even want to see my Kindle queue, the reason is because whatever mood I'm in, that's what I want to read. If I want to read something about James Bond, I'm going to pick up some of John Gardner's books. If I want to read nonfiction, I'll give you a great book. I'll recommend a great book to you. The Language of Food by Dan Jurafsky.
Okay.
He's a linguist who examines food. And I know it sounds so dry, but it is one of the most fascinating books I've ever read. A good biography, a great history, whatever it is that you love to do. It's a little more work because you got to sit down. There's got to be light, and you have to hold it in your hands. But man, I'm telling you, pick the first thing to pick up will be any Adventure Zone graphic novel.
Yes,
and multiple copies of it, because they're great gifts to give to people. But after that, then you can buy some other books. But just keep supporting bookshops like this one and all of them. They are. They are a dwindling breed, and it's my favorite place to go in the world is to go to a bookstore. I don't care where it is. And so I need, those are my, that's my natural habitat. I need more of those. So just everybody, and then talk about books to your friends. I mean, this is real obvious kind of stuff, but you know, every conversation that I have with friends and family, there's a section where they go, hey, are you watching blah, 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 blah. Make sure that when you're having those conversations, you also have a conversation today. Are you reading blah, 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 blah. Because it's gonna influence you and it's going to make your life better.
100%. I couldn't have said it better myself.
And wash your hands. Have we made that point yet about washing? Yeah. Washing hands. Okay. I want to make sure.
Wash your hands, wear your mask, stay home.
Yeah. I got to tell you, turning the pages of a book with rubber gloves on is tough, but you know, do what you got to do.
Oh man, Clint, thank you so much again for chatting with me today. This has been amazing.
It is my pleasure. I admire what you're doing, and not only on the podcast, but you know, where you work and what you do, I think is extremely cool and very important.
Thank you.